Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Yes, indeed. We're back at it, talking real estate in that 10 o'clock hour here on CCR every Saturday. All right, Chris and Andy, it's, I always like to ask you what the week was like since we talked last.
Well, good morning.
What's happening?
Well, I know. Well, I know what's happening. We have TravisMNLoans.com here today.
Who? TravisMNLoans?
Yeah.
Is that my new last name?
Yeah, exactly.
Legally, he changed his name. That's how
dedicated Travis Whitford with Bay Equity.
There you go.
Home loans. So, anyways, I'll tell you what. We're going to talk a little condominiums. We don't get to talk about condominiums a lot. I know, well, let's start with that, Mr. Prasky. Mm-hmm. What's the definition between a condo and a townhouse?
You know, I think the
physically. How about physically first?
You know, condos generally is more like an apartment style of a building.
Exactly.
But then there's condo riders on almost every townhouse that I sell now too. You know, where they're actually they have the rules and the you know
a way of ownership
bylaws, a way of ownership. Yeah.
You know, that's interesting, and I think a townhouse would probably be described as it's got its own door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can kind of you can go up to the door and go in, and typically a condo is in like an apartment style facility.
These are myths, though.
Oh boy, see, that's why we're Travis MN home.
The generalization is, you know, the condo is the apartment style place, but it ultimately comes down to how it was, you know, legally done. So how's it legally written up? You'd be surprised on how many townhouses where you know drive by and you're like, oh yeah, it's a nice townhouse development. They're actually legally condos. And you know, when the property's a condo, there is more things you got to worry about on the loan side of things. So and typically what the big determining factor is that I see without calling the association is who pays the water bill. If the water bill is tied into the association dues, it's, you know, 99.9% of the time it's going to be a condo. If the unit owner pays the water bill on their own, then it's a townhouse.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And I'm not 100% sure what the rationale is for it. I think it has to do with the land. Yeah. You know, it's a condo, you don't own the land. A townhouse, you own the land. So I think there's something to do with that. But yeah, the water bill is like the huge thing, what ultimately determines a condo.
Yeah, I know with FHA financing sometimes that they're not eligible to do condominiums.
Yeah, correct. Well, so with FHA loans, the whole development has to be approved to able to get an FHA loan on it. But we got good news coming up here starting on October 15th. FHA has announced a new plan where lenders can do single unit approvals on FHA loans.
So if the actual whole complex is not approved, you can actually do each individual
you
unit
can
now.
Attempt.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. You have to, you know, send in a bunch of documents and, you know, there's restrictions and stuff like that. I mean, it has to be a, you know, a 5-unit condo development or greater. You know, the concentration of FHA loans that are going to be in that unit can't exceed 10%. So normally it's like 50% if everything's approved. The owner-occupied concentration has to be at least 50%. So if more than half the units are rentals, you know, you won't be able to get it. But basically, this is for, you know, either condo projects that either have not been previously or ever been approved by FHA, or if they're projects that had their FHA approval expire, or projects that, you know, either they withdrew or were rejected by FHA.
Because I've had that before where a place is FHA approved and all of a sudden they forgot to get their paperwork in. Association did, and now it wasn't approved.
Yep.
And we had to go through some big rigmarole to get it done.
It's a drawn-out process. You know, it's not something that's done in a week or two or anything.
I think in one circumstance, I think we had to wait like 2 months.
Yeah, sounds about right.
We had to wait for it to actually get approved again through the association. They just kind of let it lapse. And so my seller had to wait 2 months to get it sold because this person, that's all they could go.
And a lot of those associations are just doing that to cut costs. I mean, they're not doing it to be malicious or mean to anybody. It's one more thing they don't have to maintain. They can keep their costs, at bay. So if you don't have a lot of turnover in a building, for an example, or in a association, sometimes that's okay to see that because it just tells you, hey, this is a great place, great investment. There's not a lot of turnover here. It's people staying long term and caring, and keeping your expenses for a lot of us is important, keep them under control.
But I also think that you want as many ways to be able to finance that property as you can because that brings in more buyers.
As a seller, of course. Yeah. So let's talk about that because, as a seller, you're getting ready to sell your townhouse, as we call them, but let's say it's a condominium community. That's where planning ahead a little bit, going to the association and asking them, do we have that FHA, VA, whatever number, so that we can offer that when we go to sell our house? Because I think we can get more money. Your real estate agent can show you the statistics on how many people are using what kinds of financing when they're closing. That's a report we can run on the MLS. And so you can kind of see what's been happening out there. So,
well, I wonder too, Travis, if it's not FHA approved, is this something a seller can be proactive about and try to get it singly approved before the loan even starts?
Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, this is a whole new process. It doesn't start till next week, so I'm not – even FHA doesn't really 100% know how it's all going to pan out. But I would assume that would be something that could easily be done to get out ahead of it on the front end if the association is not, fully approved for FHA financing.
Financing a condo or a townhouse per se, there's the association fee. Now that is something that you have to use in your qualifications, right?
Correct.
Okay. And what I think is interesting, because on a house, you don't have to use your garbage bill and a lot of times in the association, or hey, you don't have to save money to be able for future maintenance. That you don't have to, on a house, you don't have to qualify for those extra costs, but an association you do.
Yeah. And then sometimes, like some of the condos, especially I know there's, a few of them here downtown that, have your internet or
gas, electric, water.
Have a lot of those things, hence why there's a pretty high association due. And, so there's a lot of things that are tied into that association fee that typically aren't analyzed and qualifying. So now you have to qualify them with that because it's in the association dues.
So there's no – so if it's in the association dues, you have to it's no question you have to qualify for it, even
correct.
If it's internet or cable or
yep.
any of that stuff.
Yep.
It has to go in there.
Yep. The association dues is part of your housing qualifying payment. So it's – You pay it separate directly to the association, so it's not like lumped into your mortgage payment and then the mortgage company pays it for you. They're actually, two separate payments, but we count it as your housing, your qualifying payment and your housing payment.
Because it's happening every month.
Yes.
And so that's why they do it. It's just kind of interesting because on a house you don't have to do that.
So if you're really tight, on your qualifying issues and you're buying a condo that has all these bells and whistles and with the association fees, if you don't get approved because of it, and it's that your other payments that you would have had anyway that you could have got approved with if it wasn't in there.
And sometimes it's like, hey, you can buy a $200,000 townhouse, but you could buy a $250,000 house.
Right.
Because of that. So beginning home buyers are kind of confused by that. They're thinking, geez, I can get a condo or a townhouse, I can get a nice townhouse for $250,000. Well, no, you'd have to get $200,000 to be able to qualify for that you would a house comparably.
Yeah. And, it's all lifestyle too, I mean, some people love the idea of being in a condo or a shared association like that because, they don't want to deal with mowing the lawn. They don't want to deal with the snow. They don't want to they want to have the amenities that development, provides.
Right. Well, we talk about lifestyle living a lot. I mean, I remember when I was first getting started in investment properties and buying properties, my theory was is that I wanted homes because I didn't want that extra cost that came with it with the association and stuff like that. Fast forward 20 years, I think that might not have been a bad idea to be able to have that because, I mean, then you're not dealing with it. You're really dealing with just the inside part of the house. And if you've had rentals for a long time, you tend to see that, you know, the outsides, if people don't take care of it, and let's just say it's landscape and that gets out of hand, mm-hmm. I mean, it's very expensive to come back and try to get that back into shape.
Oh, for sure. I know my family has several rentals, too. And they have associations, and as long as you have good tenants, where meaning that there's, you know, they're following the rules and they're, you know, just like everybody else, then there's usually no issues at all. So the associations can be your best friend or they can be your worst enemy as well, because they're also, once you have a habit of parking in the wrong spots or whatever, your phone starts ringing. And so it's, you know, we've always had very good luck with tenants. We, you know, like I said, my dad's always been one of those guys that he says, hey, let's put a fair rent on things. People stay longer, people, you know, because they feel that, you know, that you're being fair. And so then they, you know, treat product better. And it's been a good strategy.
Yeah, we're going to do a little trivia after the break.
Sounds good.
Very good. Stand by, you guys. And now with the 33 degrees and light snow, guys, take it away. More real estate talk here at CC.
All right, Mr. Prasky, Mr. Trivia Man.
Well, you know, so everybody reading in the paper right now has kind of got this in the back of their mind. Is this going to be the end of the housing? Is it there a bubble? Is there whatever? But So I dug up some stats on this, and I thought, you know, so when there's been what they call a recession in the past versus a housing crisis, of the past five recessions, which one of them I would include, you know, so we had one in 1980, 81, 91, 2001, and 2008. Of those five, how many of those years do you think during recessions did houses depreciate versus appreciate, would you guess?
During a recession?
During a recession, do houses go up in value or do they go down in value?
I would say equal or down.
Yeah, and actually three of the last five houses have gone up an average of 3.7%.
Housing has gone up during recessions.
During recessions, which is interesting because the market's so distracted with other things. Rates sometimes come down. There's a lot of other factors that go into it. So it's, you know, as we
think recent memory is the thing because, I mean, the last 2008,
houses went down 19.7%. Yeah. It says nationally on average, which people don't realize.
And I think that's what you remember.
And that's what we're finally back to where we've crawled back out of that hole. But houses historically over the last, you know, as long as they've been tracking them, average about just under 4%. And that's normal. So like right now when we're seeing 6 and 7%, and you say, well, geez, houses are getting ahead of income. It's true. And so what happens is there might be a soft correction or maybe there's less demand for the houses that are overpriced. So sometimes what you'll see is it's not that houses are going down in value. You're getting people that have to price their houses correctly. So they're getting so far ahead of the market, thinking optimistically like, hey, last year was 7%. It'll be 7% again. And you go up 7% on your pricing and you really should only go up 3% or 2% and then your house will sell. So it's more of a, I'd say a check. You know, when you have a recession or people have a fear of a recession like we're seeing right now, there is a slowdown out there. I mean, houses, we're not getting the showings that we were getting, but we are still seeing stuff sell. But it's selling when it's an honest price or, you know what I mean, when you're looking at the market analysis. So,
yeah, and I think, too, I think what's happening with people when they're buying now, it's that a lot of sellers believe that, hey, we can just put it on and not have to do the stuff we have to do to be able to kind of attract that buyer and price it right. What they're doing is they're not quite doing all of their stuff. Mm-hmm. And when I say not doing all their stuff, maybe they're not decluttering what they should. And I mean, when you go to sell, that mm-hmm. house has to look like a model home.
Right.
I mean, you're on display, right. You know, and you've got people coming in immediately at the beginning too. But if you don't do it right, it's not going to sell. Mm-hmm. So if you do it right, it's going to sell.
So, okay, let's ask the question a lot of people are asking themselves right now. Should we list in the fall, Chris Rooney, or do we want to wait till spring until it's the busy spring buyer's market?
I've, in October alone, we'll be listing our sixth house this month. We've already, of the six, three of them have already sold in October. And so
why do you think that is?
Because we did it right, and
no, of course, I mean, of course. Well, yeah, assuming that you're obviously
and by doing it correctly is that knowing what else is on the market, you know, because some of that market, hey, there's no one in it,
right?
And identifying markets that want people in it,
right?
You know, that there's not enough, that there's people looking, but they're not getting it. So, and then doing it doing the house right, making sure that you're going mm-hmm. to market the right way.
You're spending the time with the client to prep on the front and spell check all your ads. And
yeah, right. No, but you know what
I'm joking
doing.
With
yeah.
you. I know you guys do a great job. That's what I'm saying. I think it's more of a, also the psychology behind the buyers that it's, you know, there's a lot of buyer demand still. It's very strong, you know, this time of the year that it's the average market time was like 31 days last month, you know. So it's like in the fall, there's less competition. So the biggest months of the year are generally the spring when you have that March, April, and May. There's more competition for you as a seller on the market. So instead of just having one house for sale on your street, or I always say my favorite thing to study is, you know, what's for sale within a half a mile of your house? And back in 2008, I would say there's 75 houses for sale on average, or 60 houses. Nowadays, it's two. It's tight. I mean, the market's tight. So when you think about positioning yourself against a competition and you want to sell, and you look at that, you know, strategy of, hey, in the fall, there's less competition. So the buyers that are actually out there are serious buyers. You're right. It's a good strategy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I got one example of a house in Eagan that we just did, and it's 825. And in that 800 to 900 market over there, there's 11 houses that are listed. Nine of them are new construction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, okay, hey, that's what we're competing against. But you know what new construction means.
Yep.
It's a model that they might not sell.
Yeah.
And it's a to-be-built that, hey, we could put it up. And then there's a few sticks that yeah. are up on some of them.
Well, that's kind of like Dayton. I live right in Champlin, you know. And so there's, you know, always 60, 70 houses on the market in Champlin at any given time for sale active. You look at Dayton, which is generally a smaller populace, and there's usually 30, 40 houses for sale. Well, now there's like 90. And or 80, you know what I mean? And you look at it, and more than 50 of them are all the new construction, to-be-built houses, because there's all these fantastic new opportunities there. And so that marketplace is absorbing, like you said, the new construction. It's in a growth mode where there's, you know, it's a very exciting time to be in that community. So
yeah,
lots of
also,
good things happen.
I mean, also in this fall, too, I mean, the interest rates still aren't too bad.
Mm-hmm. No, they're really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're... at, you know, 30-year fix at, you know, four under. You know, they've been bouncing around quite a bit here in the month of September. Early September, I think it was like the 4th through the 11th or whatever, we saw our worst increase to rates in a three-year period. And then, you know, a couple weeks, you know, slowly but surely over the next 2-3 weeks, it, you know,
filtered back,
comes back, yeah. You know, so there is quite a bit of volatility.
Let me ask you, what happened on that? Did people kind of like, oh my gosh, and lock in at those higher rates, or did they wait it out?
No, most people, if there were refi situations, most people waited. I advise
refi,
them,
but like, how about
yeah,
like
for
buys.
Purchases?
Yeah.
Most of with my clients, I didn't have the active buyers that needed to lock right at that time. They were already okay. previously locked, and now I got a new wave. So most of the people that were in the position to lock during that sharp increase to rates over that short period of time probably waited.
Yeah, but you run an office too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how about with the other people? What would you say, Andy? Too. I mean, mm-hmm. Do you think hey, let's hold off for a second. Let's just see what's going on when we're looking.
Yeah, I mean, it really, really depends. I mean, I think that if you're the buyer that's, you know, buying within that payment, you know, so the payment's everything. You want a $2,000 payment or whatever that is. Yeah, you do have to be very sensitive to your rates and you have to pay attention. But like when we're building new, I think most people sandbag, as I suggest, you know, by $40,000, $50,000. So if they do decide to indulge a little bit on those upgraded light fixtures or the, you know, electric or whatever they decide to add, maybe the deck at the last minute, they have the capacity within their loan budget to accomplish that.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing too when you're building, you know, that you have to kind of take into account. We always remember when we had that little battle about what's better, existing or new construction, which ones to go after. Jeez,
it's always interesting. It's an interesting argument because you know your price is higher on the front end, but your cost to own it is lower,
exactly.
Right? Because you don't have to fix anything; everything's brand new.
Those association fees versus no association fees.
Yeah,
when you're buying rental properties.
Absolutely.
But looks like another break.
Yes, it is. But we'll be back with more of the Real Estate Show here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. And once again, let's get back to the Real Estate Show here again, Chris and Andy.
All right. So since we're supposed to do trivia the last time, why don't we try it this time? Or did we? No, we did start trivia.
Yeah, I think we did.
And it went off on
Thanks
something.
For remembering.
So,
So the old analogy of a latte a day keeps the house away, right? So a lot of our younger buyers nowadays have been, you know, out there and they get busy in life.
Latte a day keeps the house away?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
So we ran a little study. How many lattes do you have to not drink a day to save up a down payment in 5 years? Okay. So if you have a 5-year plan, your kids are there to buy a house in New York, downtown New York, the average deposit. Well, let me do it this way. How many lattes do you think you have to hold back on per day for 5 years to afford a down payment in New York City?
I've got a lot of money saved up from not having lattes because I've never had one. But,
we'll call them a coffee. Oh, hot cocoa for you. So how many hot cocos a day?
How about iced tea?
Iced tea.
Okay. How many iced teas a day for 5 years? Okay, 365.
So you're doing New York. Travis, what do you think it costs in Chicago?
I'm doing New York.
How many lattes do you have to not drink per day in Chicago?
Not as much as New York, but probably pretty close.
All right. Three a day for me.
Okay, so Chris, you're actually at 6.8 lattes per day that you'd have to not drink.
Okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
And Travis, you're, 10 years for my down payment, you're at about 3 lattes a day. But the good news is, guys, is in Minneapolis, it's actually an average of 1.6. So your average purchase price here around $335 to save $10,000 or $5.72 a day. You have to save 1.6 lattes a day. So there you go.
Is there so drink out of the buffalo company. Wings on that?
Buffalo wings.
How many buffalo wings?
You have to cut back to 2 pounds a day.
Mine's like in 6 months, I could buy a house.
No, but you know, I think it's fun to make it for a younger person tangible to say, listen, you buy, you buy your friend a coffee. Like my daughter does it all the time. They swing by the old coffee shop and buy each other coffees, and it's, you know, $5-6. They don't realize that. If they take that $5-6 and throw it into their account, their savings account or whatever, they could, within a couple of years, be a home buyer. And I think it's something to really think about.
Okay. Got anything else?
Not all of us are billionaires, Rooney.
I'm going to be using this a latte a day keeps home ownership away line in the future.
As I start getting the hate mail from all the big coffee shops in town.
I do have to tell a story. This is a long time ago, and I won't mention any names, but I'll never forget, I sold a house to this person, and I got a call, like a frantic call. It was like 2 weeks before closing, and I got a really good deal on this house, and I got a call, and I met this person at a restaurant. We were sitting down and talking, and they put a budget together and determined that there's no way they can buy this house. Mm-hmm. They can't buy it. I think at the time, it was probably $125,000, and probably could qualify for about $300,000 at the time. And so we're going over it. This person is saying, oh, well, my budget and this and that. I said, well, let me see your budget. And in there was a can of pop a day that was in the budget. You know, so maybe you might be onto something, but it was a 50 cent, you know, like that was there. That was part of the reason that this person could afford it.
So,
and it was, long story short, I mean, we got past that, bought it and has bought many houses since. But I mean, just people nervous, you know, that, hey, they're going to lose. Hey, I'm not going to be able to buy that latte a day. And that there's some truth to that. I remember when I bought my first house,
right,
my payment, I assumed a mortgage. I put a little less than $3,000 down, which took a lot to get to that, and then assumed a mortgage. And my payment was like $654, and that was including the association fee. And I had no idea how I was going to pay it. There's no way. I can't. I mean, you can't do nothing. And you find a way in which to do it. It's amazing.
Typically, like when I qualify people, we always start with the payment and work backwards as opposed to what they max out for. And more times than not, people end up being higher than that payment and they stress out a little bit. But once you get in the house and you start realizing what you have, people adapt really quickly. And, you know, they always make it work outside of, you know,
you start learning how to cook, instead of eat out every night.
Yeah, well, interesting you bring that up, Chris. I've got another interesting fact here.
Boy.
So if you take and you wait for a house, okay, so for an example, everybody's anticipating that rates are going to creep up over the next year. So if they go from 3.6, roughly what they are today, an average $250,000 purchase price, and so your payment's like $1,136 a month roughly, right? So if you wait till next year to buy that same house, the house appreciates to 263, so from 250 to 263, and rates are at 3.8%. What do you think that costs per month?
Rates
go up from 3.6 to 3.8. On a payment for that person, and the house went up a little bit in appreciation, the average payment goes up $91 a month. Over the year, it's almost $1,100. So, of course, I equate that back to my lattes, right? So per
it's
month.
It's not only that, plus it's the, what, the $13,000 more you paid.
Well, and so, over 30 years, I calculated that by waiting to go from 3.6 to 3.8 and the house appreciates $13,000, it cost that person over $32,000 of additional interest over 30 years of that loan. So when rates are where they're at right now and they're, oh, it's 3.6 or 3.8, it makes a huge difference for that person that does count their coffees or their Cokes, which those people out there listening, I do love those people. Budgets. I love budgets, you know. The power of money compounding is ridiculous.
And I think people don't do budgets because they don't want to be accountable to them. They just don't want to know.
Right.
Talk to realtors about that all the time. Nobody knows what they spend or whatever because they don't want to know.
Right,
you
exactly.
Know, because then it's reality.
Isn't that what we teach people, though? The first thing you do in real estate is go buy a $1,000 a month car payment, you know, get that fancy car.
Yeah.
And then that keeps them motivated or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta be said for that. So,
boy, that was good trivia.
I try to help. Well, you know, and if you break it down, Chris, that's a nice sushi dinner, right? Once a month that you save by having those payments save. Or it's a nice weekend getaway for somebody, or you can pay off your credit cards or whatever over a year. That's it goes to show the power of if you have a job where your income is consistent. And, you know, your salary or whatever, this is a great way to get ahead, you know, so.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Listen.
Do you have anything else?
I'm going to spill the coffee on your mic here pretty quick here. We better
figure out something else to talk about. Do you have anything else?
Well, I wanted to go back to Travis. I mean, Travis, you know, when you look at the power of money right now and you look at when rates do, I mean, how exciting is that for you to call somebody and say, hey, rates, you know, corrected this week a little bit. Or got that much more attractive. Now, you know, this kind of information is something you can actually share with people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a nice feeling. There was, you know, quite a few refis that I was working on, you know, late August, early September. And, you know, then we took that dive or increase in rates. So, you know, hold off. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, it was nice to be able to give them a call. It's like, okay, we're back to where we were. Thanks for your patience.
Yep.
You know, and you proceed with it. So,
what does your crystal ball kind of say going into the fall and into the winter? What do you think rates will do?
You know, if I knew that question, I'd probably be on my own island somewhere. But you know, geopolitical stuff sways things so much here these days. You know, personally, I think we're going to be relatively flat. You know, within, you know, a quarter, you know, up or down here and there. I don't really foresee anything jumping up too drastically. But I think we're in line for real solid rates here for the next, you know, year or so. Probably a little higher than where they are right now, but nothing that's like, you know, closer to five than,
right.
You know, four.
Right.
So as you guys have been talking, I've been kind of figuring out some stuff.
I heard some clunking over there.
That was my brain. But anyways, I came up with, to help your trivia part or whatever it was, the whole payment thing. I'm adding more sushi dinners on because let's just say that you didn't buy that $250,000 house and you waited till next year. Well, you got to live somewhere.
Yeah.
And so that $250,000 house is probably $1,500-$1,600 a month in rent
alone. Least.
So now you're losing, you know, $450 extra a month. That's a lot of sushi.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that those are, you know, that's our job as real estate agents. And those that are listening, I know a lot of us that are out there, you know, we worry about what's happening in the economy. It's a big part of our job to be an educator and make sure that people understand the decisions they're making. Just because you see it on, you know, online, oh, it's cool to be a renter, I feel free. But their rent's going up every year 5%. The write-offs aren't as attractive. They're not writing off the interest. They're not actually gaining any appreciation in that house. Just like stocks or any kind of other investments, they can go up and down. But the thing is ultimately at the end of the day, if you hold it long term and you pay it off, eventually you have an asset there with a bunch of money. So the idea there is just, you know, obviously we're pro housing. That's why we do this show. We believe in the American dream. And, you know, the thing is it's just sometimes something so simple and so obvious that we overlook. And getting involved younger with the kids, that's why I really think it should be something they teach in the high school and junior high level, talking about how to sign a lease, how to buy a house, how to negotiate a car deal, you know, or whatever else. And it's just something that I think we as professionals need to get involved with.
We actually used to do that. It was called Personal Applied Math Class, Darwin Busselman at Prior Lake High School. They did it, and that's what it was. It was all about that. And then I come in and do the real estate talk. I know we got a break. I'm going to mention that because I think there are some really interesting things because when I was doing it was kind of in that 2006 to 2008 range for the kids.
Very cool.
All right, we'll do that when we come back. More Real Estate Show coming up here on CCO. Let's get back to more Real Estate Show here again Chris and Andy.
All right. Gosh, it's coming to the end already. That was quick. But, you know, before the break, I was talking about that personal applied math class that they did at Prior Lake. And I don't know if they do it anymore. And if they do, they don't invite me. But
that's the hurdle that tripped you?
Yeah, exactly.
It's been holding you back all these years?
Totally. I don't know what's going on. But in that class, we went, we talk about real estate. Now, these kids were mm-hmm. juniors or seniors in high school. And I thought what was interesting, because I was doing it in that 2006, kind of 2008, 9. I did it for a number of years. And one of the topics we talked about was foreclosure, you know, and how, you know, and how that happens and how that works. And I got so many phone calls after that. I mean, that these kids after class would talk to me, and they had no idea what their parents were going through. And that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And that it was like, they didn't know if they were going to be out of their house that day. And, you know, because that's something that it's not something you just talk about. You know, it's kind of like you're trying to figure it out and trying to do it. And they didn't know if they were going to be out on the street or whatever. But it was really, I mean, so people understood, hey, here's what happens in that foreclosure process.
Right.
You know, and how it goes down the line. And you're not going to get kicked out tomorrow. And you have time in which to do it. And kind of like the steps that they might be able to see because their parents weren't telling them.
Well, of course. And I think that you have that fear of, you know, hey, I'm going to be homeless or I'm going to have that house taken away. When are they going to come? And educating somebody on if they're in that unfortunate circumstance, you know, what their rights are and how they protect themselves and they protect their families is really critical. And I know actually a lot of the local banks that, you know, there's not as much of that happening anymore because that's a very small topic, but they are spending the time to have people understand. They send them packages that so they understand their rights as a mortgage holder.
Yeah.
And so the idea there is that, you know, education is a big, big part of this. And I think that, you know, just like anything else, I mean, you know, we all have to have shelter of some kind. But if you can use that shelter to build a little wealth for you and your family, have that little nest egg that someday you can, you know, tap into and use as a resource, it's a cool deal.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what was interesting about that whole thing. I've had since two of those kids that were in a class, they told me about it. They're in a class. They ended up buying a house through us. And that's everyone talks about these millennials and they're just worthless and, you know, whatever. I just don't see it. I see that they're, I mean, pretty darn responsible. I mean, these two kids saved up all their money and, you know, had enough money to be, you know, down payment and be able to buy a house. And but I think it had something to do with that before.
Well, sure.
You know, they went through that and they don't want that to happen to them.
Right. They were exposed to it. You know, think about that for a second. When you're exposed to something like that and you see that, you go out of your way to avoid it. You know, that generation is the infomercial generation, too, where they've been sold from the time they were little kids on TV and everything else. And it's one of those things where they're not as receptive to the same ads that, like, the Gen Xers are. Or, you know, like now the Gen Z generation coming up where, you know, you do like these we do a lot of these AdWorks things where we'll follow people and we run ads in front of them. And, you know, like, it's interesting when I bounce stuff off of my son and his buddies, and they're like, yeah, that kind of advertising is kind of sick. You know, we don't like it, or we, you know, or whatever. And so it's interesting is how they communicate and how they do things completely differently, you know, or like new construction. We talk about that, even the millennials coming in and asking for gaming rooms. And you think, gaming rooms? I mean, literally, you're talking about 30-year-olds that love to play video games. And it's part of their culture that wasn't part of our culture. I mean, Atari's only take you so far, and we got bored with Pong, you know, and then these guys have amazing stuff that's out there.
Andy, you talked about that about 2-3 years ago about, you know, shifting rooms into something like that.
Yeah.
And to be able to create that kind of stuff. And it's true. And for marketing purposes, you know, doing a gaming room and it's who you're targeting. And nowadays in social media, we have the ability to do that. It used to be, hey, we just put on MLS and this is what the house is. Mm-hmm. Now we have the opportunity to be able to go out and say, hey, you know, like really, hit on one part of that house that, you know, you're trying to catch everyone when you're marketing a place, but hey, maybe this one has a pool. It's all about lifestyle living. It's about the pool. And by the way, you get the house that goes with it.
Or you think about this, the gamer that is out there that actually wants that high speed lines. And we don't think about that stuff. What is the speed at that house? And what's funny is I've had houses where I'll do an open and the people will come through and say, well, the only reason my husband would look at this is because it has a 1.7 gig speed or whatever the numbers are, you know, or they have fiber optic or they have whatever. And so it's interesting is that the different buyers coming in are using their houses differently. Just being able to, you know, respect that a little bit and understand that, hey, this formal dining room now may become a game room, may become a toys kids playroom, may become a spare bedroom, may become a whatever. You know, if you're like my buddy Al up in Coon Rapids, he took his formal and turned it into a pool room because he's a single bachelor, right. and his house is amazing for me.
I just drove by the other night when the twins were on.
Yeah.
Do you know I had to go to the emergency room, by the way, Monday night? I didn't tell you that.
No.
I just told everyone. I kneeled on my knee, and it swelled up. I kneeled on it. This is horrible. Ended up going in there. They did all these tests. It ends up being a nothing thing. If I would have just taken some Motrin. But anyways.
Is that one of the entourage?
Yeah.
Today?
But when on the way there, I was going by, and it was the Twins game. And this guy, his garage was open. Oh, yep. My God. Like the coolest garage ever.
Yeah.
Set up with neon lights, and he had a bar in there, and all his friends were over there.
Yep.
But it was like then he had the screen down. You know the screens that go where the garage doors are?
Where the bugs don't get in or
leave
or whatever?
It was fantastic. Yeah. But, you know, another marketing thing is actually showing someone what a payment would be. And how do you get that lowest payment? I know there's adjustable rate mortgages that you can keep for a while, but I think when we're talking about, you know, trying to get people in, be able to get them the lowest payment possible. What is that? I mean, those adjustable rates, I mean, they're, to me, I love them. I think they're great because they give you enough time to, whether you're going to move or whatever.
In this day and age, though, too, like those adjustable rates aren't that much lower than the 30-year fixed
mortgages.
Like
I said, you should
right
always
now
go with fixed rates.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's you know, there's been margin compression.
I'm guessing they gave you some meds for the knee.
Still out of.
Yeah. I've actually been buying down rates quite a bit here with some of my
You're
clients.
Buying down?
Yeah, so they're...
Because they're thinking long-term, Stan.
Yeah, and they're paying, you know, they're paying additional closing costs to get the lower rate, to have the lower payment, because... You know, if you're solely focused on payment, putting an extra couple thousand dollars down on the loan only drops your payment like $5 for every thousand.
Right.
Where you pay an extra couple thousand dollars to buy down that interest rate, now maybe you're saving $50 a month.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so that's, you know, I'm typically more of a fan to try and get a little bit more equity, but not everybody is, you know, in that position to do that. So buying down a rate is a good way to get that payment a little bit cheaper, assuming you have the cash to do it or there's seller paid closing costs to help cover it.
Yeah, I think that we all think, you know, and I hear it more now with the millennials than ever, is that they're thinking, hey, we're going to stay in this house forever. And I used to think that too. And then you move, you know, three times or whatever in the meantime, or you buy the cabin, or you kind of live up to your means a lot of times. Or if you make more money, you may want a nicer home, whatever the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think what's interesting about millennials is they do carry a little bit more of a conservative view of housing. They buy what they need. They take advantage of great rates. And I think they're just a smart generation, really, the ones that are out there doing it. So,
and if you need those good interest rates, go to TravisMNLoans.com. Or you can also find him and Andy and I at AndyAndRooney.com.
Very good, guys. And we'll see you back here next week with more of the Real Estate Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.